move on to the next case, which is Josephine Manuel versus City of Chicago.
May it please the court,
Andrew.
Counsel. This is a case where initially, prior to the trial of this matter, the city filed motions in limine to prevent any testimony coming in about any other acts of discrimination. And those motions were granted, we believe, erroneously. Then, when the trial took place, the city itself presented testimony that, in fact, asked questions about whether or not the supervisor of my client, Ms. Manuel, had engaged in other acts of discrimination. And he indicated he had not. After that testimony, the jury was recessed, and it was pointed out to the judge that, in fact, this violated the very motion in limine that the city itself had brought. A determination was made by the judge that, in fact, this opened the door, that this did, in fact, violate the motion in limine. As a result of that, we had requested that we then be able to show, to impeach Mr. Fattori's testimony, that in fact he had engaged in other acts of discrimination. That in the past there had been evidence that my client and two other blacks had applied for another position, and the decision-making authority, Mr. Fattori, passed over all blacks who were applied for that position, and, in fact, decided in favor of the one white applicant for that position.
Mr. Andre, how far did that go? I mean, at what stage in the proceedings did that particular case go? Was it just the filing of the EEOC complaint? Or what?
No, there was no EEOC complaint filed on that case. However, that was a part of what we had actually included in our case previously. So that had already been involved in our case, because my client was one of those candidates, too. So that actually involved her as well. And then there was a matter of...
Did she testify to that?
I'm sorry?
Did she testify to that?
No, she was not permitted to testify.
On that?
That was part of the motion in limine. So she was not permitted to testify. And in fact, she had already testified, and she had observed the motion in limine. And then afterwards, Mr. Fattori testifies that he's never discriminated against anyone else, and in fact, never discriminated against her.
So you have to try two cases if all that went in, wouldn't it?
Well, that was the argument made by the defendants. However, the defendants brought in what essentially would be a whole plethora of cases by saying that Mr. Fattori never discriminated against another person based on race.
Well, the judge, I guess, thought he was, I don't know whether he or she was curing the situation by just telling the jury to disregard, which obviously is not doesn't erase one's mind, but that's what the order is.
Well, the problem with that, and even the judge realized that there was a problem with that, because he told the story about the idea of telling somebody to disregard is like throwing a skunk in the middle of the situation. And it's very important to take into consideration that my client had already testified, so it can't be remedied by her testimony coming forward unless they allow the additional information. And it must be considered that the jury had taken a lunch break, because the judge specifically said, well, I want to look over this over the lunch. So the jury had already heard Mr. Fattori deny he never discriminated against anyone. And the instruction, frankly, was as confusing as it was instructive, because what the judge said to the jury was, the question and the answer have not been proven. So the jury has to now relate, well, what is the judge talking about here? What is he saying when he says it has not been proven? Is he saying that he did discriminate? Is he saying that he didn't discriminate? What is going on here? It just simply was not clear. We made the point at the initial arguments about the motion in limine that under the rules of evidence, we should have been able to bring that testimony and that evidence in any event. Under Rule 404B, it points out that while under some circumstances you can't present evidence of other bad acts, It says it may, however, be admissible for other purposes, such as proof of motive, opportunity, intent, preparation, plan, knowledge, identity, or absence of mistake or accident. Intent is the essence of a discrimination case, because what the defendant is arguing is, I did a thing for a non-discriminatory reason, and the plaintiff is arguing that they did it for a discriminatory reason. Intent is the whole case. And when you have evidence of that could be relevant to intent, it should have been allowed in. Barbara Sutton, in fact, did file an EEOC complaint previously. She did allege that she had been discriminated against by Mr. Fattor. She was a witness that could have been put on after that fact. We did put her on after the fact, but we were not permitted to question her as to her observations, which she was in a position to testify to, why she felt she was discriminated against by Mr. Fattor, and why she observed other people and felt they were being discriminated against by Mr. Fattor. She was only allowed to testify to her observations of what she saw between Fattor and my client, not others and not herself. The brief submitted by the city also argues that this is harmless error. It's interesting that they make that argument given an admission they made in the same argument, because on page 34 of their brief, they indicate that the defendant's evidence consisted primarily of her own testimony. Well, then, if in fact other persons testified, Barbara Sutton, who was a distinguished credentialed professional with the City of Chicago and still working with the City of Chicago, that if she testified to the events that occurred between her and Mr. Fattor, and the jury were able to conclude from that, yes, this guy discriminated against not just Josephine Manuel, but her, then we could rebut the taint that had already been put into the case that the judge and even the defendant admits is in the case by opening the door, asking Mr. Fattor had he discriminated against anyone in the past. So to say that this is harmless error, given the fact that we could have had another witness to validate what my client was saying, and in fact the argument for it being harmless is based on my client being the only one to testify to discriminatory conduct, then clearly it's not harmless error given the exclusion of that testimony. All these reasons make it clear that what should have been allowed was frankly what should have been permitted in any event, based on the fact that the motion in limine should have been denied, and that was to allow us to show that we could produce evidence of other events of discrimination to show that his intent was not just a legitimate business decision, but that it was discriminatory. And having been barred from doing that, to allow the evidence to come in and solicited by the city, and to simply say, well, it wasn't proven, doesn't really resolve the problem. They violated their own motion in limine. They clearly opened the door. They even admit they opened the door, and we should have been able to produce evidence based on their opening the door. It was not harmless error. For all those reasons, the decision by the trial court has to be reversed, and my client allowed a new trial. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, fine. Ms. Denning?
May it please the court. On appeal, Ms. Manuel complains about the district court's exclusion of two types of evidence regarding Barbara Sutton. First, Ms. Sutton's testimony of her opinion that Mr. Fattor is a racist, and second, the fact that Ms. Sutton filed her own discrimination complaint against Mr. Fattor. We will address these two issues in turn. Regarding both the exclusion of evidence that Mr. Fattor recommended a white person for the second project administrator position, and our contention that even if the district court erred, it was harmless error, we rest on our brief, except to say in response that the city has a uniform non-discriminatory policy that was followed in this case. Mr. Fattor consulted the list of applicants and filled the position from that list. Ms. Manuel was not on that list because she did not apply for the position. Turning to the first issue, the district court did not abuse its discretion when it found Ms. Manuel's offer of proof of Ms. Sutton's testimony unsatisfactory. The offer of proof contained nothing but Ms. Sutton's naked, unsupported opinion. On the second issue, the only offer of proof presented to the district court was that an EEOC complaint was filed. Ms. Manuel did not even offer to call Ms. Sutton to testify regarding that complaint. In fact, the most liberal reading of this offer of proof is that Ms. Manuel intended to offer the complaint itself as evidence. But of course, to submit the complaint as evidence of the truth of allegations it contains would be hearsay. The district court did not commit error by excluding this inadmissible evidence. Unless there's anything further, we ask this court to affirm the district court's judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Andrew, do you have anything to add?
Two points. Counsel says that my client didn't even apply for the position. The reason was the position was never posted. My client had been talking to her boss about a position such as this for months prior to the time that a decision was made to change a position that was previously listed as a mechanic type position and rephrase it as a projects coordinator position, which she would have been qualified for, and in fact did qualify for in a later submission. So
it wasn't required to be posted, I gather, by under the...
No, it was not. But the point is that when counsel says she didn't apply for the position, it sounds as though she wasn't interested in the position, and she expressed her interest many times. She was never advised that there was a position opening up to apply for. And there's an admission by the city that there's a word-of-mouth policy with respect to many of these positions. And so that's why she wouldn't have applied, although she was interested.
Word-of-mouth for many of these positions? I mean, this is something that's rather common?
It appears to be, because in the testimony by the personnel expert, she said that, you know, there are many positions in the city that they simply depend on word of mouth. They don't post it. Interestingly, in other of the same positions, project coordinators, they did post them. It's just this one they didn't post. In addition, on the offer of proof, the offer of proof pointed out that we wanted to submit not just a complaint or an EEOC charge. We also wanted to submit Ms. Sutton's observations of what took place, which is certainly admissible, not just some conclusions that she made. So counsel's argument that that therefore validated excluding her testimony simply doesn't take into consideration that we wanted to offer her observances, not just conclusions. For all those reasons, the decision must be reversed.
Okay, thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement.